D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. I hope everybody is having a wonderful start to their Friday. I have an etiquette question for the two of you to start today's show. So yesterday, I was traveling home from picking my son up from school. And as most of you know, I live in East Nashville. So I pass by Nissan Stadium on my way home from picking up my son. Last night, of course, Metallica played Nissan Stadium. Chase McCabe was there. Joe Rexroad was there. And as I was stuck in traffic, because there was a lot of traffic heading in that direction, I noticed a lot of fans walking toward the stadium wearing Metallica t-shirts. And I was raised to believe, and by raised, I don't mean by my parents.
By yourself?
By my fellow concert goers when I was younger, that it is uncool to wear a t-shirt of the band you are going to see in concert. Are either of you familiar with this concert etiquette, and do you subscribe to it?
I'm not familiar with it, but I look at it sort of like a game. You know, you go to the game and you wear the jersey. Yeah, you wear your jersey. So I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't wear, if I was to go to a concert, I wouldn't wear that performer's shirt. I wouldn't do that. But I'm not going to scoff at somebody else that chooses to wear, you know, a Metallica shirt or, you know, a Prince shirt when the late great Prince was alive. I mean, a lot of people get into costumes, you know, when they go to concerts and plays and stuff like that. So I don't see this as being any different, but I don't do it.
I don't think there's a hard, fast rule that I have. You're the first person to bring this up. So I feel like I would have had somebody bring this discussion to my attention before. Mm-hmm. I've never done it because I'm not one that buys the expensive t-shirt when I go to the concert. Usually the line's so long, even if I had a thought of wanting to get it, I quickly look at the line and say, t-shirt's expensive. Do I want that? I'm not going to wait. So I'm probably not the right guy to ask. But so what's the big beef?
Yeah.
When was this first discussed in your circles? What age? What was the concert?
Or when did you ever get that upset at someone?
I never got upset about it, but I think it also depends by genre, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people who went to the Metallica concert last night are probably Joe Rexroad's age. A lot of old heads, a lot of old metal heads.
Calling Joe old. Okay.
Yes.
And Chase.
Yes. Chase is slightly younger
than
Joe Rexroad.
Chase is an appreciator of classics.
Joe Rexroad, he called the old head.
So he would be on the younger side of the demographic.
I think it depends by genre. Like, I think it might be okay in the metal genre to wear the t-shirt of the band that you're seeing in concert. Maybe it was in the genre of music that I was raised in, which is if you went to Vans Warped Tour every summer like I did, the punk and the emo kind of music. Okay. I think it might be a no-no there. It might also be a no-no in indie rock circles because you might be trying too hard by wearing a band t-shirt to the concert you're going to. I don't know, but it's something that's been ingrained in my mind since I was younger and going to concerts regularly. So when I saw a couple of Metallica fans crossing the street wearing Metallica shirts, I was like, I don't think they should be doing that. That's not cool. But I digress. I wondered if anybody else
has, I look at it as a jersey. That's how I look at it.
Was there any other, trinkets or accessories to go with the shirt that kind of put it over the top for you? Like, if it's just a shirt and you're dressing regular, or do you need to like go all in with like wristbands and drumsticks?
So the people I just saw
or something.
The people I saw were just wearing T-shirts, Metallica T-shirts going to the Metallica concert. I also subscribe to the theory that if you are a sports fan, mm-hmm. I feel like you can only wear one major piece of paraphernalia to a game. If you're going to a Titans game, uh-huh. and you're going to wear a Titans jersey,
don't wear the hat.
Don't wear a Titans hat.
Not even to a game?
No.
I think you're okay at a game.
Too
man,
much.
He has some.
I don't think you go to work like that on the day.
Nah,
of the game.
You can't go unless it's like Titans Day.
I subscribe to the day. I'm up for the one piece at a time.
Yeah.
I don't want for somebody all things out. Except for the game. The game, I think you can go full passion. You can go all
outside of the game. You can't be all decked out. Now, can you go to a Metallica concert with a Def Leppard shirt on? Can you do that?
What if you appreciate all bands? And
exactly.
You're just trying to show it.
And you just want to wear that band
shirt. Do you risk going on the Jumbotron as the lost fan? We have a lost fan. He thinks Def Leppard's playing here.
I mean, because you can do that at a sporting event, you know?
Right, and that was a funny gag that the LA Kings did to a Vegas Golden Knight fan when they were playing the Predators. They put a Vegas fan, the Kings Predators, lost fan. Can you please help this person? He thinks Vegas is playing here.
Oh, man.
Wes in Hermitage says, Adam, stop lying, man. I saw you at the Morgan Wallen concert at Nissan Stadium, and you were wearing your crop top wall and shirt with the blue jeans and boots. I have the picture, man. No denying
this. I'd like to see that picture.
I don't think you would ever catch me at a Morgan Wallen concert. Oh. Not my genre of music.
Oh, my goodness. What genre is he? Is he country?
He's country,
pop?
Yeah.
Yes, he's country.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Nevertheless, I just wanted to get it out there. So if you have heard this same theory, you let me know. 615-737-1025. But yesterday, we were introduced to Tyler Lockett. The Tennessee Titans held news conferences for Brian Callahan. Chika Conquo spoke and really pissed Jared off because apparently he went on too many vacations during his offseason. Peter Skoronski spoke. Xavier Woods spoke. But Tyler Lockett was the highlight of the group. And first of all, he, before taking questions, shook the hands of every reporter in the room. Mm-hmm. And I thought he gave a really funny response, asked why he would do that. He basically said, look, we're going to be together almost every day, just like I am with my teammates and my coaches. So I think it's important that we get to know each other. And he even said, look, you guys are going to be the ones writing the story. So who knows? Maybe that handshake will be a little bit easier on us down the road, which I thought was funny. But some really interesting sound bites from Tyler Lockett. By the way, he did say that he actually grew up a Titans fan and went to the Titans playoff game versus Baltimore during the 2008 season, mm-hmm. which means he saw Derek Mason haul in a 48-yard touchdown from Joe Flacco in the Ravens' 13-10 win.
Yeah, I'm sure he pretty much did. Yeah. I think everybody in the stadium saw that.
Absolutely.
I saw it.
I saw it.
I saw it.
I was there.
But Tyler Lockett, so if you haven't heard this, Quandre Diggs, who played for the Titans. Is he still on the roster, Quandre Diggs?
No. I don't think he's
on the roster. I thought he signed a one-year deal.
I can't recall.
He's back.
But Quandre Diggs, who played with Tyler Lockett in Seattle, is Cam Ward's cousin, if you hadn't heard that before.
I think I read that out of an Athletic article the day after round one.
Right. So here was Tyler Lockett on his first impressions of Cam Ward.
Tyler, how much has Quandre maybe told you about Cam and just from afar, even though you haven't gotten to play with him yet? What is it that stands out about his game that you like?
Oh, yeah. Well, Quandre always used to talk to me about Cam ever since he was leaving Incarnate Word and went to Washington State, where I got the chance to be able to watch him. And if I didn't watch him, I heard about him the night before the game because Quandre made sure to tell us his stats, how many touchdowns he threw. And definitely Quandre was like his number one fan. And so just being able to tune in a lot more because we're on the West Coast and we got to see a lot of their games being played. And then seeing him thrive in Miami was super, super cool. And again, like just that connection with Quandre and Cam, I started to be able to learn more about him. And so ever since he's gotten drafted. You know, Quandre put us in a group message, and I was able to talk to him and stuff like that, like the day before the draft. But he's definitely a cool dude, super eager, and he cares a lot about being great and cares a lot about football.
He must be drumming on the podium, because that's what that was. Like, what is that? Boom, boom, boom. But that was Tyler Lockett on his first impressions of Cam Ward. But later in the news conference, he was asked about the challenges for veteran wide receivers of working with rookie quarterbacks.
What's the biggest challenge about working with a rookie quarterback?
I feel like it's a challenge working with anybody. Like, if we're being honest, like, it's not even just on a quarterback. I mean, you know, it's a challenge whenever every year you're bringing in a whole new team. You know, I've been a part of three coordinators in the last 3 years, so there's a challenge in learning different plays, right? Like, so everything is going to come with a challenge. It's just about what you're willing to go, what you're willing to attack and what you're willing to complain about. So, I mean, there's always going to be complaints when it comes to whatever situation regarding of what we're going to have to deal with as a team. But, you know, to buy in eliminates a lot of the complaints. To attack, to be aggressive, eliminates a lot of the complaints. There's going to be things that doesn't work. It's okay. You learn. You keep going. There's going to be things that work. You continue to build off of it. You grow off of it. But you just continue to look at where you are and where you guys want to be. And as you keep just putting your head down, eventually you're going to get to where you want to be at. But if you keep looking at that destination, you keep forgetting about the small steps that you got to keep taking before you get to the top.
So that was Tyler Lockett. Kind of a non-answer to that question, mm-hmm. But I did want to ask for Derek's perspective on that same question, because as I said, Tyler Lockett was at the 2008 playoff game between the Ravens and the Titans, where Derek Mason hauled in a 48-yard touchdown pass from a rookie quarterback by the name of Joe Flacco. So Derek, using your experience, what are, if there are any, challenges what are the challenges for a veteran wide receiver as you start to work with a rookie quarterback?
First, I want to say, Tyler, I think what he said was true. There are a lot of other, you know, things that you have to worry about, or things that are going to be difficult or challenging. You just have to figure it out as you go through the season and try not to look back. He was right. If it works, then you find a way to keep doing it different ways. If it don't work, you can't, you know, get upset about it. You got to move on and try to find something that does work. But the challenges of working with a young quarterback, there's always challenges, man. I think the biggest one is to make sure that his confidence, I think that's the biggest challenge. Because young guys, whether it be a quarterback, a receiver, whoever, they tend to get down on themselves. And you got to help them sort of fight through that. You got to continue to encourage them. I was always told just the best way you can help a quarterback, you know, especially a rookie quarterback, just be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. That's it. And he will start to get familiar with you, and he will start to trust you. So that was the biggest thing. You know, in watching Joe, because when I started playing, Steve was already in the league a few years. And when he became a starter and I became a starter, he was 2 years, 3 years up on me. So there was the difficult part about that was just getting the rhythm. But when you're dealing with the rookie quarterback, it's the potential up and down, you know, moods that they may occur because of the way the game's going, or they may have made a mistake, or may have thrown, you know, the ball, you know, too far ahead of you, and they think it's their fault, and sometimes they may get down on themselves. No, you just got to continue to encourage them, continue to talk to them. So those are typically the difficulties that you may run into. It's just the length of the season, the emotions of the season, and trying to make sure that he's always tapped in, meaning the quarterback. Make sure that rookie quarterback stays tapped in.
Willie, what were your early impressions of Tyler Lockett?
Seems to be an impressive guy. I thought of Steven Stamkos and his hearkening back to when he was an 18-year-old player in the NHL, and he was on a bad team. He was on Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay had the first pick. That usually means your first team or two, it's not going to be very good. That's probably going to be the case with the Titans. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'd love to see what is the best record. What are the best records of a team that had the first pick the following year?
Sounds like a homework assignment for me.
Sounds like a job for Adam Bingham.
Maybe we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that on Monday, perhaps.
Because I think we have to brace ourselves that this is going to be a learning experience. And so what Steven Stamkos said was on that Lightning team, there were some guys that really were good influences on him. Marty St. Louis, Mark Recchi.
Vincent LeCavalier have been on
Vincent
those teams?
Vincent LeCavalier, absolutely. Yep. So I think the you can hopefully surround Cam Ward with some good influences and guys that maybe one day when Cam Ward is more of a veteran and looks back on the building blocks, mm-hmm. that a player like Tyler Lockett can be a positive force on that.
The one thing I like about Tyler Lockett, again, just from what I heard and what I know of his career, there are a couple of things. One, he rarely misses games. I believe it's 3 games in his 10-year career that he has missed because of either injury or illness. That's always a good thing. The other thing, too, is the fact that he seems comfortable in his skin in the sense that he knows he's coming in here and he's probably going to be playing a supporting role. Derek, you talked about last season with DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley, that maybe DeAndre Hopkins wasn't at that stage of his career where he could accept a lesser role, and that you called it. You said it wasn't going to work, mm-hmm. and we saw it play out. DeAndre Hopkins, he lost his smile. He lost his love of the game before he was traded from the Titans to the Chiefs. I don't see that being an issue with Tyler Lockett. He seems comfortable at the stage of his career that he's in, and I could see him being a really good influence, not just on Cam Ward, but the young players in the locker room as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't know how he was in Seattle, but it seems like just listening to him, you can tell he's a guy that's seen the ups and the downs of a team and been to the highs and been through the lows and, you know, had to work himself, you know, through situations. That's just the way he speaks. It gives off that, you know, that calmness and that, you know, hey, listen, this is what we got to do, and we can't look back, and if it's not working, then we got to, you know, find something else. He's always thinking about the next step and the positive aspect of it and not dwelling on the past, and you can't dwell on the past, especially when you have a young quarterback. But, I mean, he, unlike Hop, and this is no slight to – I don't mean this as no slight to Lockett, but he was never at Hop's level.
Right.
He was never – so I knew the minute Ridley got here, I knew. I said, this is not going to work, especially if they start losing. It is not going to work. And it didn't. And they shipped him off to Kansas City. I think in this situation, because he's been through it the year prior, when he got – it was sort of his snaps got taken away. He got demoted in a sense. He stopped being one of the main targets in their offense. I think through that whole process, I think he learned a lot about himself and learned a lot about where he's headed in his career. So when he comes here, like you said, he's comfortable in – not that he doesn't want to excel and play great, but he's comfortable where he's at. He's not coming in thinking, you know – I'm the number one option. He's been through, you know, the sort of fire already the year prior. So he comes here and he's ready. He's like, whatever you want me to do. If it's a two, I'll play the two. If it's the three, I'll play the three. If it's coming in and only on, I do whatever I need to do to help out this young quarterback in this team. And that's the type of veteran guy that you need. Because he was never a guy. It's hard to take a guy that has been the guy for many, many years, and I'm talking about Ben, like Hop. It's hard to then ask those guys to take a much lesser role. But for a guy like Lockett, he had his game. He's a good player, damn good player. But I think the step down isn't as far as he starts to get older. Where Hop, it's like a hop, skipping a jump back for
him.
I
see what you did there.
Hi, you like it, aren't you?
615-737-1025. Bravo. 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on Tyler Lockett as he introduces himself to Nashville, the newest member, or one of the newest members, I should say, of the Tennessee Titans. 615-737-1025. Speaking of newish members of the Tennessee Titans, there is a subject that I do want to get to, that I've been meaning to get to for the past couple of days, and I would really like to finally get to it today. And we will do that next. 615-737-1025. Let me tell all of you to tune into 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Gwinnett. Pre-game begins at 5:50, and the first pitch is at 6:05. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure.
How did you help Mike through that process?
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, Mike led this entire process, and you know, that's why we hired Mike to lead the draft, free agency, building the roster, and I have complete trust in him. And you know, how I helped, you know, there's a lot of other people in this building that I gotta, you know, care for and be there, and other departments I gotta run. So one of the nice things about this setup was that while they were in the draft room, there were times where I had to get pulled away for various meetings for an hour or two. And I'd come back and Mike would say, hey, you know, we looked at these five players, but you really need to focus on these three. So it really helped my, you know, workload to be able to know what to focus on and have the full trust in Mike that I believe in him. And he knows what he's a really good evaluator. And the humility that he has is just tremendous. And it really, it helped me still be involved in the process. But ultimately, you know, my trust is in Mike. I mean, I think he's outstanding, and I'm glad we have him.
That was Chad Brinker on Titans GM Mike Borgonzi. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. What are you doing?
And Mike, we trust. That's the new slogan.
I thought you were going to start singing Bob Marley.
I did think that was – I thought that was happening.
In Mike we trust. That's the new slogan, man.
So I think now is a good time to take stock of Mike Borgonzi. It's early, but we've passed free agency. We've passed the draft. And I know that Mike Borgonzi is going to be judged by what the Titans do on the field. But I thought this would be a good time for all of us to share our early impressions of Mike Borgonzi. And Gentry Estes of the Tennessean wrote a column, I believe this was earlier this week, April 28th. That would have been earlier this week. I don't remember what day it is, other than the fact that today is May 2nd. With the headline in the Tennessean, with Mike Borgonzi, Tennessee Titans are starting to resemble a well-run team again. And Gentry Estes writes, quote, I know, I'm one of the biggest skeptics around, but I'm sensing that the biggest upgrade this offseason by the Titans won't be at quarterback or anywhere else on the field. It'll be in the front office, where new football CEO Chad Brinker didn't just hire a serious football GM in Mike Borgonzi, and evidently he's staying out of Borgonzi's way. The Titans added several serious football people. Former NFL GMs Reggie McKenzie and Dave Ziegler, along with Borgonzi, have brought welcome expertise. It may not be a strength yet, but no longer is the Titans front office the weakness that it was the past two seasons with Rand Carthon as GM. Gentry Estes continues, Borgonzi has a vision for long-term success, disciplined and grim as it might seem in the short term. His Titans have been busy clearing the decks. This is a rebuild from the foundation, and they are serious about seeing it through, even if it isn't sexy or popular or a path for immediate success. So again, we are going to judge Mike Borgonzi as Titans GM and Chad Brinker as the supreme ruler of football on what the Titans do on the field over the next few years. But from what you've gathered from Borgonzi and listening to him speak, the things he's said, the free agent signings he's made, the draft picks he's made, Willie, what are your early impressions of the Mike Borgonzi era in Tennessee?
Well, Mike Borgonzi himself, I think, is a little different than the team, and they're obviously intertwined. It seems like it's going fine. I think, as we say a lot of times, we'll find out when you start facing the tough times is when you find out what a group is made of. It would be nice for this group to get off to a good start and have some hits in the draft. So I think it's way too early to make that judgment at all. I like how they handle themselves, although you know me, I have been very critical of the thought process of the group of not trading out of the first pick, knowing how many holes they have to fill. So I'm still going to hold that thought, but I do think that they look like they work together pretty well. I'm not in there every day, but so far so good.
Derek, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, listen, every GM, head coach, supreme ruler of football, they all come in with a vision, and they all come in with a tagline, and they all come in with a mission. And you just hope in all of that that they assemble a good team, and that that team starts to take form early, and that they have some early success. Listen, I'm not going to be too high on this regime or too low on this regime. Just like any other, they got to prove it, and they are in a difficult situation. And this roster has been in a difficult situation for the last three seasons, and they just inherited, more of the mess, from the last regime. It was a mess when Rand took it over, and it didn't seem as if much changed. I would say, he got a few good players out of it, but for the most part, the roster, the talent didn't change much, because they still don't have the depth that they need. So he made some good moves in free agency. The left tackle, I'm still kind of hesitant about. But hey, listen, you had to find somebody that can play that position, because you wanted to move JC over to right, and you found your guy. Hopefully, it works out. But they are doing the things that they said. Wow, this is crazy. They're doing the things that they said they were going to do, and they're trying to hold steady to that. You got to give them some years now. Just because it may not work today doesn't mean it's not setting up something for next year or the year beyond. Seems like right now they're making the right moves.
I think, as of now, that's a good point. I think in 3 years is when I think you look at what they've done and ask yourself, how is it going? Mm-hmm. I think we could have said, hey, we're really optimistic about how Rand Carthon looked after one draft. You just can't. I don't think you can. Reasonably, it's just you're guessing.
That's why I said early impressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's why I said. Well, that's early what impressions. I mean.
You can't make any mistakes now. There's no games being played right now, so there's nothing, unless you want to nitpick everything and start shooting holes. I do think the biggest decision they made was not to trade the first pick,
and so you can include that in your early impressions.
That is my early impression. So only time is going to tell. But I like how they handle themselves. They seem like they work well together. They seem like there wasn't any friction going on beneath the surface. But this is the first year, so they haven't hit the storms yet.
I'm going to read more from Gentry Estes' column, because I agree with him on this point. Quote, Borgonzi is already proving a good hire, if only because he and Brinker as well have taken a suitably sober approach to cleaning up the mess. It's refreshing, in fact, he writes later, to see the Titans no longer insulting everyone's intelligence by trying so hard to convince them otherwise in terms of being a competitive team.
But remember, they still had Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill and Kevin Byard when Rand Carthon took over. So they came into a bleep storm, okay, right? They came into rebuild.
Let me continue.
That's not fair to Rand Carthon, because Mike Vrabel was clearly trying to hang on and win, and that was the task of Rand Carthon at that moment.
Let me continue this last line from the column that I'll read, and then you can respond. The legacy of Carthon's disappointing two-year tenure will be how he depleted the Titans roster while also depleting trust from a fan base that had to feel duped by all the false bravado.
Depleting the roster of what? They didn't have... See, this
that
is,
was the task of Mike Vrabel,
but this,
right?
But this is what confuses me. He depleted a roster of what? This was an aging team. That window was gone. The quarterback had gotten hurt. The only thing this team had was the running back, Derrick Henry. I mean, they had good players, but the one thing that you just held on to and said, if we're going to have a chance, it would be with Derrick Henry. But they tried it, and it didn't work. So as a team, they had to figure out, how do we start this process now? And I go back to what Willie said. The minute they got rid of Derrick Henry on them, even before that, they should have said this is a rebuild. But the minute they got rid of Derrick Henry, last year, they should have came out and said, this is a rebuild.
Right. Absolutely.
Because they had.
But that was, remember, that was year two of Rand Carthon.
Exactly. They had to
about
do that.
Year one, they still believed that they could win that division. And that was a Mike Vrabel push, in my mind. And Rand Carthon was sort of thrust in there after the surprising firing of John Robinson. And I don't think Rand really had a choice. I think Mike Vrabel's like, I'm running this ship. I'm not here to rebuild. We still have Ryan Tannehill and all of these players that are trying to hang on to the window. Am I wrong? That's a completely different situation, and it didn't work very well. I do think this group came in more collectively. There's more first-year people that are doing a fresh start here. And so I think the circumstances are very different.
Well, here's the biggest thing for this regime that the last regime had to deal with. This regime doesn't have those veteran players. They just don't. They don't have a choice. Those guys that had been here, like pillars. They didn't have Derrick Henry. They didn't have Kevin Byard. They didn't have these guys that were entrenched in his organization. So when they come basically with a clean slate. It's like, we get to build this team the way we want it. Well, Rand made his mistakes, okay? Whatever transpired. He didn't do the job good enough. That's why he doesn't have a job anymore. So don't think I am making an excuse for it. But when you come into a situation when you have this team is being led by veterans and one really damn good one in Derrick Henry and the others are sort of phasing out, then and a head coach that has done some winning, you almost like, okay, we're going to try to keep winning. I'm not going to try to rebuild right now. We still got core players. But it didn't work. So the next season, in the middle of the season, they traded away Kevin Byard. Everybody, moaned about that one. He went to Philadelphia, didn't play no better than what he played here. He went to Chicago, didn't play no better than what he played here. His career was down on that downslope of his career. And the GM and the head coach saw it. He knew it. He was a great player, but he was on the downside of his career. So they had to move him, and they got a pick for it. Those are things that you have to do as a GM when your team gets older. You got to make those hard decisions. Keeping Byard another year wasn't going to change the fact that this was not a good team. It would just kept them in limbo. Right.
So I would say the early decisions were a lot tougher for Rand Carthon when he got there, and it was hard to just jump in there and be in lockstep with everybody because people disagreed for what direction to go in. Mm-hmm. And so for Gentry to say, insulted everybody's intelligence, I don't think everybody was saying it's time to break this team down.
They were saying
keep Tannehill, keep Byard, keep Henry. Let's see if we can make one more run with Mike Vrabel and sneak a weak division title out.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts, your early impressions of Mike Borgonzi as Titans GM. 615-737-1025. The 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor presented by Gary Force Acura at Hermitage Golf Course is on Thursday, May 29th. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com. Tune in today to 102.5 The Game for Vanderbilt baseball as the Commodores face Alabama. Pregame begins at 5:45 and first pitch is at 6. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Willie, fill us in on what's going on with the Vandy boys right now.
Well, it's a big series. Alabama is a good team, and on any weekend, I would say 15, conservative, let's say 13 of the 16 teams. The one team that is extraordinarily historically bad is Missouri baseball. I don't know what happened over there, but they're getting crushed every weekend. I don't think they've won a league game. Vanderbilt, unfortunately, doesn't get to play them.
Oh, man.
Alabama is a good team. Obviously, protecting your home field is very important. It's much harder to win on the road in the SEC than it is at home. So Vanderbilt was able to manage 1 out of 3 last weekend at Ole Miss. So this is a big weekend for them to flex a little bit here. Coming down the stretch of the regular season, they are on collision course in Knoxville with Tennessee. Is the final weekend of the regular season. So you want to rack up some wins here. And what Vanderbilt is trying to do is secure home field advantage in the regional. That, I think that's a reasonable goal. Be a host of a regional when the playoffs start.
So we are talking about Mike Borgonzi, and I want all of your early impressions of Mike Borgonzi at 615-737-1025. We're past free agency. We're past the draft. I know that he is going to be judged by wins and losses, but two of the major points of the GMing calendar, we'll say, free agency and the draft are behind us. Bob in Mount Juliet says, I think Borgonzi is, this is Jared from Spring Hill. Sorry, Bob in Mount Juliet. This is Jared from Spring Hill. I think Borgonzi is talking out of both ends, doing it the Kansas City way, but going to start Cam Ward. And saying he wants picks, but turns down the best trade offer to get him more picks in the top 100. So I think he's flaky so far. And I don't think he's truly in charge. Just a warm body with a Boston accent keeping Chad Brinker happy. That's Jared from Spring Hill on our text line. Bob in Mount Juliet says, that team sucked because Rand signed Andre Dillard and drafted Peter Skoronski 11th overall and Tajay Spears, who wasn't going to play ahead of the King. Rand sucked. Just say it, D-Mace. He was awful. That's Bob at Mount Juliet.
I'm not going to say he was awful. He went and got Devondre Sweat. J.C. Latham seems to be a good player. So, I mean, and I can go down the list with, free agent guys that he brought in, and I can go down a list of the free agent guys that seem to not have worked at this point. The main one is trading a third-round pick for Lajarius Sneed, and that at this point hadn't worked because whatever injury he had, it has sidelined him. So, listen, Rand doesn't have his job because the team didn't get better. But that doesn't mean that Rand wasn't set up, like that this whole thing was set up for someone to come in and be successful, but he didn't do the job the way he should have. And so I'm not going to make no excuse for that. Had he done a better job, he'd still be here, point blank. But I'm not going to sit here and think that he didn't bring in some guys that were contributors and guys that were good players on his team within the last couple of years either.
One thing that I like about what Mike Borgonzi has done, particularly in free agency, and we mentioned it with Tyler Lockett, is that the Titans have brought in players who are durable, who play every game. Xavier Woods, another player who spoke yesterday, if I recall correctly, played every single defensive snap. And that is not hyperbole. He played every single defensive snap for the Carolina Panthers last season. Dan Moore, I know that the Titans backed up the Brinks truck for Dan Moore, and you can argue about how many sacks he allowed, but he was on the field. Tyler Lockett's missed 3 games in 10 years. I think that is an important thing. Here's one thing that I think that Mike Borgonzi should probably not do as much. I was reading back through that Albert Breer article that we referenced at the start of the week about how the Titans landed on the decision to draft Cam Ward. And because of where Mike Borgonzi came from, and we've heard players comparing, we've heard analysts, namely Lewis Riddick and I believe Kevin Clark, in the draft process, comparing Cam Ward's, some of his attributes, to Patrick Mahomes. And there was a quote from Mike Borgonzi in the Albert Breer article, quote, I'm not comparing him to Pat, but some of the stuff I saw with Pat just in terms of his instincts, spatial awareness, arm talent, arm angles, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Pat. And I was careful to say it. Pat's a future Hall of Famer, and you know he's got a long way to go, meaning Cam Ward, before he ever reaches that level. But some of the stuff, just the instincts, spatial awareness, vision for the field, reminded me of Pat when I watched him. And although Mike Borgonzi started off that quote saying, I am not comparing him to Patrick Mahomes, when you put Patrick Mahomes and Cam Ward in the same sentence, people are going to take that as he is comparing Cam Ward to Patrick Mahomes. The fact that Mike Borgonzi and the Titans did not take that reported trade offer from the Giants, they believe in Cam Ward that much. That would be the one thing that I would caution Mike Borgonzi. Maybe don't mention Patrick Mahomes and Cam Ward in the same sentence. Even if you say, I'm not comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. It's a dangerous game because, you know, we played the telephone game. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I read that quote and people are going to say, did you hear what Mike Borgonzi said about Cam Ward. He compared him to Patrick Mahomes. I just think you should probably be careful lumping those two in the same sentence.
But if that's what you see, that's what you say.
I understand
that. If you see those things in him and you just hope, like, having those traits doesn't mean you become that person. And I think people understand that, but they don't understand
things
it.
Get lost in translation.
Yeah, so it's like if it was just fluff, then I think he can get away from that quickly. If he's just trying to, you know, blow smoke, I think he can get away from that comparison very quickly. But when you watch him, there are traits. There are things that we see or we've seen Patrick Mahomes do that Cam Ward is doing in college, where he did it at University of Miami. You could say that about a few quarterbacks, you know, because they've watched Patrick Mahomes. And one of the main reasons, I think, is because he's a baseball player. And some of those throws, the sidearms, all this other stuff, that comes from being a baseball. That's normal to him. It's normal to Patrick Mahomes. It's normal to Cam Ward. It's normal to Kyler Murray, guys that have played baseball. So when you see that, the first thing your mind goes to is Patrick Mahomes. Not that you're comparing him, but you're saying, like, right, man, this dude got traits. Like, I see the throws that he make, you know, and the ability to get out of the pocket and throw at an awkward position. I've seen that before, so it's okay for him to say that, I think.
There's a million scouts, evaluators, GMs that have done the same thing in every sport.
Yeah.
So whether you choose to do it your first year with your first pick, that is a question that I think you're asking, Adam, if we're evaluating Mike Borgonzi. But I'm willing to I'm waiting until you start playing games. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out sooner or later. You shouldn't be made or broken based on what you choose to say about Cam Ward. Because, as you said, it's not like he was just building them up. Now, we mentioned Vincent LeCavalier earlier in the show. What was the mistake that Tampa made when they first drafted him? He was 18 years old. They said, this is the next Michael Jordan. That's what the owner of Tampa Bay said. The next Michael Jordan. Now, Vinny LeCavalier would have been picked by the Predators if the Predators had won the coin flip, the lottery that year. So they picked it second. They traded up to pick second, picked David Legwon. Vinny LeCavalier was a really good player for a long time.
But not Michael Jordan.
But that was the worst tag you could possibly give the guy. What the heck?
Mike Borgonzi.
Now, that's dumb. Mike Borgonzi, what he did, that was not in the same league as what that happened, but same stratosphere.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts, early impressions of Mike Borgonzi as Titans GM. Let us know. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, what message did the Tennessee Titans send with their NFL draft selections? Some interesting comments that I want to get to next. 615-737-1025. Also, a reminder that Ask D-Mace is at 12:30. So if you have questions for Derek, you can get them in on our text line right now at 615-737-1025. Nashville's best deal this week is Prince's Hot Chicken, the original and iconic hot chicken joint. For a limited time, grab half off a $25 gift card at thegamenashville.com/deals.